Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning, Andrea Bernstein, in today for Brian Lehrer. Each year, New York Magazine gives its readers a chance to drool over exceptional living spaces around the world in its annual Global Urban Design issue. This year's theme might hit a little close to home for New Yorkers feeling cramped in their not-so-spacious apartments, since the magazine has chosen to focus on bigness, from a glass house in Tokyo to a Bushwick warehouse commune. Wendy Goodman is the design editor for New York Magazine. She joins us now to discuss the buildings featured in this issue. Wendy, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Andrea. Great to be with you.
So how did you come to choose this theme of bigness? Are there any global trends that make this a particularly relevant aesthetic trend today?
It actually happened as it does sort of when I'm out on the street scouting, and all of a sudden I started to notice these wonderful opportunities in bigness. And I was actually at a party at the Commune Loft in Bushwick, and I looked around, and it was at night, so I was going, oh my God, this is fascinating. There are all these people living here, and the only reason they can be in New York City and pursue their dreams is because they're living here. They're sharing the space, they're sharing the rent, and they're living in this really fascinating way. So then I started to look at bigness and what it meant for people, the aspirations, the dreams, how people invested in properties in the city at a time when people wouldn't even go into those neighborhoods. And I thought, there's a really interesting story, not to mention that we're about to break ground on the biggest development New York City's ever had, which with Hudson Yards. So we have a story about that in the issue, and it's really by Justin Davidson. It's fascinating.
Well, let's just stick with this Bushwick warehouse commune, because in a way it's an indication. I mean, it's a big space, but it's a lot of people. So
yeah.
Your sort of personal space, or the, you know, what you have for yourself might actually be small. It's sort of like, you know, when you add a bunch of smalls, you get something big, but you're still kind of crowded in there.
That is a really great point, because in fact, they all made the decision that they would keep the space as open as they could, which meant, as you point out, that they have very small bedrooms. So, but it was a conscious decision, and certainly they could have built it out any way they wanted. But they decided that once you get into this big space with all these fantastic windows, you know, you have to compromise in any New York residential situation. And so their compromise was, let's have a small sleeping space and a big living space. That's what they decided.
I'd like to just throw out to listeners, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I'm wondering if there are any people who live in such an arrangement, big space, lots of people packed in, or maybe people have chosen a small space, and I'm wondering what they do to make their small spaces feel bigger. So we'd like tips, tricks, and current living arrangements at 212-433-9692. Now, in this design issue, sort of, you know, jumping across a very big pond, you are looking at a glass house in Tokyo. Now, this is fascinating. I've been to Tokyo. Tokyo is a place where everything is really, really, really kind of small and efficient. So what is that about?
Well, the thing about Tokyo, you know, when I was looking at this with everyone here, we thought, wow, this is interesting. Tokyo is very, pressured for space, obviously, and the opportunities to build are so wonderful. If there's a sliver of space between two buildings that have been there for a while, this architect decided to use that opportunity to design a house that basically is very fluid in the wall situation. You can pull back curtains, and it's very open. So you actually feel like you have a lot more space than you do.
I'm wondering also if you can talk a little bit about public spaces, which are, you know, a sort of urban design trend, in almost sort of every modern city, that, you know, the Times Square pedestrian plaza type model, which, if it creates a pleasant public space, the theater is, then you've just expanded the amount of good living space that you have. Can you talk about that a little?
Well, I think it's very important that cities, you know, that the whole urban development think about the public spaces in on so many levels. I mean, people are because of the technology, you find that people are more sort of sequestered in their homes and working from all their different electronic tools. So that sociability, I think, is still a really important part of our human experience. So I think it's really important for people to have wonderful public spaces for their kids, for families and for friends. And also, it's just good for the environment. You know, I think that Bloomberg was thinking, obviously, that the less cars, the less pollution. It's positive on so many levels. And I think the sensitivity is how do you develop that space so that you get the optimum experience for the people in that urban space.
I mean, it's interesting that you talk about electronics because, of course, iPhones and iPads and all of that have completely changed the way people's apartments are. I mean, we used to have to bring around these boxes of records and find rooms for them, and now you don't have to find room for your records or your TV. Even you can just kind of hang it on the wall. How has that transformed space in New York?
Well, I think that it's transforming lives more than anything else because you can basically, people had to perform and behave in certain ways. They had to go to destinations to work. They had to go to libraries to research. They don't have to do any of that anymore. I mean, they can work and do so much from their home, and they never have to leave it. And I think that's, you know, when I was in Bushwick, I went out to get lunch for everybody. So I'm in this cafe, and there are all these adorable, like, you know, 20-somethings. Nobody's talking. And I'm serious. Not one person is talking. It's dead silent. They're all gorgeous and adorable. They're on their whatevers, iPhones and iPads. But they're not communicating with one another. They're not looking at one another. And I thought, wow, this is so different from the way I grew up.
You can have, you know? Though, but you can have. I mean, you can have a much smaller apartment because you don't have to have so much stuff. Let's take a call now. Eric from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio.
First time, long time to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Oh, well, welcome.
Great to have you filling in today.
Welcome to the air,
Thanks
Eric.
So much. I have the triad of devices, a MacBook Pro, an iPad, and an iPhone. But my comment for making small spaces bigger, I actually live on Avenue C in Manhattan, shout out to Lower Side Avenue, is to use adaptable, movable furniture. And also the use of mirrors, large mirrors in small spaces works well. Yeah. I credit a lot of my design learning from my boss, Dr. Norma Tan of Core Group, Organizational Learning Specialists. And I threw a little shout out on the radio. We're all trying to make a living here. but it's, you know, I learned a lot of her. She lives in a small live workspace. We work out of there, and it's just really great. And I learned a lot, and I apply that in my space. So movable, adaptable furniture, tables that have things that flop up and down, the table surfaces that fold in and out, really helpful to make spaces livable and workable. And that's my comment. Thanks so much for the design issue, and I look forward to reading it.
Thank you so much, Eric. And Wendy Goodman, can you comment on Eric's comment about, you know, sort of taking movable things to make your small space look bigger?
I think Eric should be a design editor. He's absolutely right. He hit the nail on the head. It is about mirrors are amazing because, of course, it can double the space. And I think that adaptable furniture is the key. You know, a day bed that is a bed and things on wheels are great and storage space that is really nifty looking. And so I think he's hit every kind of point. What he said was terrific.
Obviously, live work that Eric was talking about and sort of these big spaces, I mean, they've been totally a part of New York City history. So, you know, I'm sort of wondering what's new now? I mean, the loft, you know, the artist loft, all of that, it's part of us.
Absolutely. Well, I think New York has a great history of like a repurposing space because we've got so much industrial space in the city that is actually so beautiful. And one of the stories we have is about an old warehouse on Perry Street, and we have William Monahan, who bought it back in the 70s. Nobody was going down the street in the meatpacking district in the 70s. And he just, you know, plodded on with a dream about this warehouse. And it was not appealing when he bought it, but it was big. So he knew that he could actually eventually do what he wanted, make a dream house for himself, which he has done.
So sort of talking, you know, sort of circling back to your commune in Bushwick, I mean, other than that model, what is the equivalent now of that sort of Perry Street space? I mean, you know, we all know of stories of people who bought things in the 70s and 80s
right.
for a song. What do you
right.
do now if you're arriving now and you want something, you want to find that next, you know, thing that 30 years ago from now people are going to tell you were so smart?
Well, you know, I think you have to be very adventurous. And I think that the people who kind of like really lucked out and were all going, wow, why didn't I think about buying that then? You know, they're going into neighborhoods that are emerging neighborhoods and they're saying, you know what? I have a hunch. It might be a little sort of tough right now, but...
Or far away.
Yeah, or far away. It's a lot of subway riding. But, you know, eventually, look at the area that we're talking about, New York City, the boroughs, eventually all of it one day will be like, you know, completely developed, I suppose. And just what's happened in Williamsburg the last couple of years and all of Brooklyn. So I think that you just have to use your instinct and also have a little bit of courage.
So where should, what should people be looking at now? South Bronx?
I think the South Bronx for sure. I think that, you know, Harlem is now quite expensive, but I love Harlem, and I think there are great opportunities if you can do some work and roll up your sleeves. I think the South Bronx is really important. And, you know, parts of Brooklyn still. Bushwick is also, I mean, yeah, Bushwick, even the people in this commune.
Really? Bushwick's not over?
it is over. I mean, that's what I was going to say. I thought, oh, gee, no, Bushwick has it too. It's really on the up and up, and it's getting very expensive.
All right. We are going to have to end it there. Thank you so much, Wendy Goodman, design editor for New York Magazine. Thank you so much for joining us. Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. Thank you so much to everybody who called, and stay with WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio.